It's Radio Thrift Shop, celebrating shortwave, AM, FM, and community radio. This is DJ Frederick, broadcasting like it's 1969.
Cherokee tribe, so proud to live, so proud to die. But maybe someday when they've learned, the Cherokee Nation will return, will return, will return.
Says, con los pobres de la tierra. With the poor people of this earth, I want to share my fate. The streams of the mountains please me more than the sea.
Me complace más que el mar.
Yeah.
three classic tunes to open up this edition of the Radio Thrift Shop. The Mamas and the Papas with California Dreamin'. Before that, the Sandpipers and Guantanamera from a 45 that was released on A&M Records. And we started off with Paul Revere and the Raiders, Indian Reservation. Well, light up the lava lamp and come on a musical journey deep into the world of 78s, 33s, 45s, 8-tracks, and cassettes. The thrift shop is open for musical exploration.
What is ham radio? It's the most fun you can have with a radio. Talk to people around the world or even orbiting the world.
And you don't need a 2-year contract or internet access to do it.
Learn about electronics and be of service to your community. ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, has over 2,000 clubs across the country, including this one in your area.
Hi, I'm Jack R. Johnson, and this is Hidden Histories. Given that we are now in March and it's Women's History Month, this final hidden history on the civil rights struggle is devoted to Angela Davis. Angela Davis is often associated with the Black Panthers and with the Black Power politics of the late 1960s and early 1970s. Like them, she suffered the interest of J. Edgar Hoover's infamous COINTEL program. A Communist Party member, she was denied tenure because of her political beliefs. And on August 18, 1970, Davis became the third woman to appear on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitives list. She had spent months on the lam for purchasing a shotgun used in the abduction of Judge Harold Haley, who was murdered during a botched effort to free a convict. Davis managed to outrun the police for more than 2 months before being captured in New York City. In 1972, the jury returned a verdict of not guilty, and after she was freed from jail, she fled to Cuba with Black Panther leader Huey Newton and Stokely Carmichael. Davis was famous for tying together the diverse strands of the civil rights movement. She argued persuasively that Martin Luther King was moving toward a broader coalition with labor leaders at the point of his assassination in Memphis. Quote, "I think it's really important to acknowledge that Dr. King, precisely at the moment of his assassination, was reconceptualizing the civil rights movement and moving it toward a coalitional relationship with the trade union movement in this country. I think it's quite significant that he was in Memphis to participate in a demonstration by sanitation workers who had gone out on strike." Angela Davis ran for U.S. Vice President on the Communist Party ticket in 1980. The Rolling Stones even dedicated a song to her long struggle with the U.S. justice system, Sweet Black Angel. This is Jack R. Johnson for Hidden Histories.
The old hometown looks the same as I step down from the train, and there to meet me is my mama and papa, and down the road I look and there runs Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. Yes, they'll all come to meet me, arms are reaching, smiling sweetly. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. The old house is still standing, though the paint is cracked and dry, and there's that old oak tree that I used to play on. Down the lane I walk with my sweet Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. Then I awake and look around me at the gray walls that surround me, and I realized that I was only dreaming. For there's a garden, there's a sad old padre, arm in arm we'll walk at daybreak again. I'll touch the green, green grass of home. Yes, they'll all come to see me in the shade of that old oak tree as they lay me 'neath the green, green grass of home. I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the whine, and the Wichita lineman is still on the line. I know I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the
You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick.
Exploring science in the sea. Some of the bottlenose dolphins near the town of Laguna, Brazil, seem to have a pretty good thing going. The dolphins herd schools of fish toward spots along the shore. At a signal from the dolphins, fishermen drop their nets into the water. The people trap some of the fish in their nets, while the dolphins get the rest. It's one of a handful of known examples of humans and wild dolphins working together. The dolphins and fishermen of Laguna have been working together for more than a century, and a recent study confirmed what the locals have known all along. It's the same dolphins that bring in the bounty. More than 50 dolphins live in the large lagoon near the town, but researchers found that only about 20 of them work with people. The rest forage throughout the lagoon, spending more time and energy gathering dinner. The number of cooperative dolphins stays about the same. When one leaves the group, another moves in. Mothers appear to pass the skill along to their calves. Some of the dolphins stick to the best fishing spots, while others move around, hitting several sites. As the dolphins get near the shore, they slap their tails on the water or give other signals to their human partners to drop their nets. Researchers suggest that when the nets hit the water, the schools of fish break up. That may disorient the fish, making the ones that escape the nets easy prey for the dolphins. So the people and dolphins don't get to share many tall tales about the one that got away. Our writer-producer is Damon Bedingfield. Script coordinator, Heather Herrick. Audio engineer, Shayna Brown. The executive producer is Lee Fuman. For the University of Texas Marine Science Institute, I'm Holly Brawley.
A song Dickie Betts wrote from our second album, In Memory of Elizabeth Reed.
Thank you.
The Allman Brothers Band in memory of Elizabeth Reed, recorded live at the Fillmore East from 1971. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop. I hope that this show is eclectic and interesting and relaxed yet engaging at the same time. Love to hear from you. You could email me at frederick@christiannewage.com. That's frederick@christiannewage.com.
Sometimes when this place gets kind of empty, sound of their breath fades with the light. I think about the loveless fascination under the Milky Way tonight. Lower the curtain down in Memphis. Lower the curtain down, alright. I got no time for private consultation under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were looking for. Might have peculiar.
Welcome back to the Radio Thrift Shop. This is DJ Frederick. Thanks for tuning in. Every so often, I like to do some sound documentaries here on the Radio Thrift Shop, and today we're going to hear part one of Sun Ra, the Eternal Myth. Now, Sun Ra was born Hermann Poole Blount on May 22, 1914, and his influence has been felt in the jazz world ever since. He was a composer, bandleader, piano and synthesizer player, and a poet known for his cosmic philosophy, prolific output, and his theatrical performances. For much of his career, Sun Ra led the orchestra, which is an ensemble with an ever-changing name and flexible lineup. Though his mainstream success was very limited, he was a prolific recording artist and a frequent live performer, and much of his recording history has been documented. His widely avant-garde style echoed the entire history of jazz, from ragtime and early New Orleans jazz to swing music, bebop, free jazz, and fusion. So we're going to hear part of a documentary on Sun Ra, the Eternal Myth Revealed.
Some far-off place, many light years in space, I'll wait for you, where human feet have never trod, where human eyes have never seen. I'll build a world of abstract dreams and wait for you. In tomorrow's realm, we'll take the helm of a new ship. Like the lash of a whip, we'll start on the way and safely journey to a new
We begin the Sun Ra, the Eternal Myth Revealed Volume 1 box set presentation with Sun Ra speaking of his early influences and seeing legendary blues women at the Frolic Theater in the early 1920s in Alabama.
When I was a baby in the crib, I was listening to Fletcher Henley. I didn't know it. My people always had Vincent Smith, Clarence Smith. Man, they was playing that for me all the time. I grew up with that. As a child, I didn't know what I was listening to. And later on, as I grew up, I came right back to my roots, you might say. And I can play the blues, too. Don't forget that. Yeah, that's where I saw Bessie Smith, Ethel Waters. That's where I saw all the greats and Larry Steele. Every week, they changed shows, and every week, my family took me there. So I'm very well geared over into jazz. I mean, the real jazz. Like I call it, the wrong side of the railroad track jazz. That is where your real jazz came from, and that's what Fletcher Henson dealt with. He would go out looking for people. He always would pick out people who really had the talent, and he would develop them. Now, Duke was a sophisticated, you see. Fletcher Henson came from the South.
Next, we focus on the blues vocal influence with Sarah Martin singing with the Clarence Williams Band for an excerpt of Hole in the Wall from 1928.
Ethel Waters, Ma Rainey, Clarence Smith, Mamie Smith, I saw the whole black panorama of pure black culture. I call it that. And they were dealing with people, you see. Of course, now the educated people, like even at the school, I was going to high school there. They always played Guy Lombardi at the time for us when we went to the auditorium, or they played Jan Garber. They didn't play no jazz. So see, at that school, they were being righteous in society and all that. So I wouldn't have known nothing about jazz. I was going to all black school. They didn't consider jazz as being decent, I suppose. So then all I've learned myself, I investigated, and I chose things that were really suitable for me.
Next, we move to the early band arrangement influences, showcasing the wild and adventurous Baron Lee and the Mills Blue Rhythm Band with an excerpt of Rhythm Spasm from 1932. Sun Ra discusses why he left Alabama in 1946.
Frisbee was not interested in commercial things. It was most unusual band. They weren't interested, and they never tried. They was quite content to stay in Birmingham, and so was I, because I was among friends, and I had a lot of offers. I didn't go nowhere, because I considered friends the most valuable asset people can have on the planet. Why should I leave my friends? So I stayed there, and everybody thought I would never leave. And I didn't leave until, according to the Cosmos, my last friend in Birmingham died, and I left. Because a member of the family told me, your last friend is dead. And other members of the family said, you shouldn't say that to him. And the woman repeated, hear what I said, your last friend is dead. And I left. That's why I left Birmingham.
Upon traveling to Nashville, Tennessee in the spring of 1946, Sonny was hired by bandleader Jumpin' Jimmy Jackson for a recording session with blues vocalist Wynonie Harris. On the session, Sonny played more Barrow House boogie-woogie piano, with that downright on the wrong side of the tracks gritty jump blues feel. Included is an excerpt of Dig This Boogie. In 1946, Sonny moved to Chicago and had earlier purchased an Ampex paper tape reel-to-reel tape deck. In 1948, he began recording himself on organ in an unknown church. Included is an excerpt of All the Things You Are. Sonny recalls working with Stuff Smith.
I was playing this trio. He liked what I was doing. Sometimes he'd sit down at the piano and he'd say, no, I can't understand why the white race hasn't discovered you while they sleep. I can't understand. One day they'll listen. Coleman Hawkins came through. They're going to play together, so Stuff took me on with him. And all during the night, Coleman Hawkins would be watching my hands. He finally, something I was playing, he said, will you write that for me, please? So I wrote it out for him. Years later, the Baroness, I don't think she believed that I played with Coleman. So in the village gate, she really seems going to embarrass me by asking right in front of Coleman, Do you remember him? She put it like that. There's some more musicians in the room. Coleman Hawkins said, of course I remember him. He's the only one that ever wrote some music I couldn't play. I still got that music. It's written right, everything. I liked it so well, I told you to write it out for me. You wrote it out. I haven't played it yet. Only song I ever seen I couldn't play.
The summer of 1948, Sonny had been working with violinist Stuff Smith and invited him to his apartment to rehearse and make a recording on his paper tape machine. Sonny's machine fascinated most musicians who saw and were recorded by it. From 1948, we have an excerpt of the only known recording with violinist Stuff Smith and Sun Ra together with Deep Purple. Also in December of 1948, the Red Saunders Orchestra was in the studio for a recording session for the Supreme label. Included is an excerpt of the Sun Ra arrangement on the Charlie Ventura composition, Synthesis. Pianist Mary Lou Williams would have a lasting effect on how Sun Ra composed, arranged, and played piano. Mary Lou Williams would be one of the first to examine the signs of the zodiac in music in 1945 with her Zodiac Suite. For this segment, we go to Town Hall, New York in 1945 for a live excerpt of the Mary Lou Williams composition, Cancer, featuring tenor saxophonist Ben Webster.
This is Bird Note. To find out if a crow can recognize an individual human face, Professor John Marsluff of the University of Washington bought a caveman mask. He wore the mask while trapping, banding, and then releasing 7 crows on campus. He describes what happened later when he walked through the campus wearing the mask.
And man, it was automatic. I had a big group of birds on me scolding and coming at me when I wore that caveman mask. You know, they scolded mostly close to where we had caught the birds initially, but over time that spread and we had more and more birds involved scolding us. And typically after a couple years of doing the walking, no more trapping, we would have about 50% of the birds we encounter scold us. So the knowledge that this is a strange-looking and dangerous face seemed to be spreading through time and space, and that suggested that they indeed were keyed in on this face, because when we wore the other mask or no mask at all, we did not get this sort of response.
Marsluff and his team conducted more detailed experiments using realistic faces and new locations. They found the birds could identify the threatening people. As for how and why the crows spread the information?
I think it's one of the, if not the most important function of a mob. It's a benefit to survival to point out and recognize challenges in your environment.
Support comes from Sasquatch Books, announcing The Breath of a Whale, Stories of Nature's Remarkable Creatures of the Deep, from the author of The Hidden Lives of Owls.
And this is DJ Frederick. You've been listening to The Radio Thrift Shop, digging deep into musical delights from the past century of recorded sound. Doing radio old school, but I do have a blog, and it's an old school blog. It's radiothriftshop.blogspot.com. That's radiothriftshop.blogspot.com. And until we meet again on the airwaves, keep your radio free. Thanks for listening.